It's now time for everybody to be living the dream with Drew and Luke. They get you caught up on everything going on in NCAA basketball, a preview of ACC hoops, bubble talk, and more. It's time that we all start living the dream with Drew and Luke.
Good afternoon. Welcome on to Living the Dream. I'm your host, Drew Goodman, here on this beautiful Tuesday afternoon. Back from spring break, we have Luke Nagy-Carney. Luke, what's going on today?
Not much. I'm doing well. Just vegging out, drinking a Pepsi here.
Absolutely. Pepsi's up. No alcoholic beverages on this show. Well, I know this is your favorite time of year, Luke, March Madness. How about those games last night?
Wait, how about VCU? You know, a lot of people didn't think they'd be able to make another run back to the tournament after losing all the production from last year, but they got it done against Drexel last night, winning by 3 in Richmond.
It's an excellent point. Skeen, Rodriguez, Roselle, all the main players from their Final Four run last year, and they stumbled early in the season. They lost to Seton Hall by a lot. They got killed by Georgia Tech, and they really got to go into the CAA tournament this year.
Yeah, and a lot of people were saying, is VCU going to get in? Is VCU going to be left out? And their resume really didn't really jump out at you, and getting that win last night was huge for them, obviously, and now it's Drexel who might be on the outside looking in from the CAA.
I believe Lenardi had VCU as his last four out as of bracketology on Monday. So VCU really didn't need that win. I guess George Mason's only their top 100 wins they had all season, wasn't it?
And Mason struggled down the stretch, getting blasted really by VCU in the conference semifinals, losing a couple weeks ago to VCU in the last game of the regular season. And you know they're obviously not a tournament team. It was looking like they might be, and the CAA might get three teams in, being Drexel, VCU, and Mason. Now it might only get one.
Now, the CAA last year, they had a bunch of wins against the top 50. I mean, they had ODU win the tournament. They had Mason and VCU both get in as an at-large. But this year, VCU, I believe was the RPI number 15 conference in the country.
Yeah, I think so.
So, yeah, they really needed that win last night. Now, let's talk about Drexel for their at-large chances. Drexel Dragons in or out this year?
I have them out. They don't have a lot of marquee wins. They have a lot of wins, but they don't have a lot of big wins. Their biggest win probably is VCU in conference. Have a loss to Virginia. That was a big opportunity for them earlier in the season. Have a loss to Mississippi, I believe, in that same tournament. Lost to Norfolk State is really, really damaging.
They rebounded nicely from that Paradise Jam. They had, I believe, 18-game winning streak going on in the CAA finals. But yeah, the CAA this year really is not a two-bid league.
And it's hard to leave them. It's hard to look at their record and say to leave them out, but even at 27-6, 16-2 in the CAA, their RPI is 67 after last night's loss, and their strength of schedule is an ugly 251st in the country. So those really aren't the computer numbers you need to impress the selection committee.
Certainly a weak bubble this year, possibly end up in Dayton. You see them ending up in Dayton in that first four?
If they get in, that's where they're going to go, I believe.
Definitely. Great game in Richmond last night. How about also the Davidson, Western Carolina, and Gonzaga, St. Mary? Some great games last night.
Boy, two overtime games on two different channels at the same time. We were flipping back and forth yesterday, going from one game to the next, and we didn't know how we'd keep it up.
It was great. We flipped from one game, goes to overtime, and then the next game, wow, this one's going to double overtime.
Yeah, and one of those games was a lot different because Gonzaga and St. Mary's were both locks. Both teams were ranked, and the West Coast Conference is going to get those two in and probably BYU. But the Southern Conference was only one big league, and both those teams were going for the same bid, and Western Carolina is going to probably go to the NIT now after that damaging loss last night.
Davidson's been a real enigma all year. They had that great win at Kansas early in the season. I believe the only team to knock off Kansas in Allen Fieldhouse this season, but stumbled down the stretch, and they still ended up with the conference regular season title, and they had their chances to put away Western last night, but the Catamounts really came back.
Yeah, they did, and they hit a couple shots to force the overtime periods. And, you know, you really feel for Western Carolina there. Could have been a Cinderella-type team. They would have gone to Dayton also, but now they're probably going to go to the NIT.
They really pour their hearts out in that game. And going back to Gonzaga and St. Mary's, do we see these teams as maybe 6-7 seeds in the big dance?
Well, I think both are around that area. Maybe as weak as the field is probably going to be, one of them can sneak up to a 5 maybe, but I think you're right there, a 6-7, probably in that area.
It's amazing. Gonzaga, they were the Cinderella team for the early part of the 2000s. Now they really have the name recognition. Like they're one of the top programs.
Yeah, they're one of a few mid-majors that you can't really call mid-majors. They're up there with Xavier and with a team even like VCU that's made a Final Four run that might not come from a power conference, but you throw in Memphis there as well. You still have to look at them as generally a power conference team.
They have a lot of. They're in all the preseason tournaments. They have a lot of marquee out of conference games. Mark Few has certainly done a terrific job up at Gonzaga.
Yeah, he kind of strikes me as the mid-major version of Coach K. Just staying at his school, good every year. He just doesn't stop.
I kind of see him as a Chris Peterson, where I mean, he gets like at Boise State for football. I mean, he gets a ton of offers every year to go, but he seems very happy the niche he has at Gonzaga.
And I don't blame him. I mean, if I could keep beating my conference like a drum every year, and you know, get some top contracts, get some top recruits, and you know, keep winning, bottom line, I'd stay where I was too.
March Madness indeed this year. We have the ACC tournament coming up. Before we get to any of that, some awards were handed out yesterday. And first team All-ACC, we have the entire Carolina front line of Harrison Barnes, Tyler Zeller, and John Henson. Pardon my language, but John Henson. Duke freshman sensation, Austin Rivers, and Mike Scott. Any surprises there, Luke?
You know, I really thought we'd see Terrell Stoglin from Maryland there instead of one of the Carolina players. I thought either Barnes or Henson should probably be on the second team in favor of Stoglin. I just don't see how a guy who puts up 21 points a game is the leading scorer in the conference doesn't make first team. I mean, we saw him on Sunday against Virginia. He put up a very quiet 25, but he put up 25 against that defense. And, well, you know, I don't know how you can leave him off.
He was the driving force of the turf. So I thought maybe Travis McKay got the same deal. I mean, he was basically the only player on Wake Forest this year, picked up all their numbers. I was kind of surprised he got the kick. He was pretty low as well.
That's true, too. And at the second team, we had C.J. Leslie, Kenny Kaji. Help me out here.
We had Eric Green from Virginia Tech. So we got our handy-dandy laptops here.
We had Kendall Marshall as well.
Kendall Marshall on second team.
And some people were thinking that Kendall Marshall should be on the first team.
The league is run by the Carolina Mafia. Who's
might as well,
yeah.
Might as well put the whole Carolina team on there. And maybe Stillman White on third team?
Yeah, exactly.
Why not?
James Michael McAdoo, Rookie of the Year. I mean, who was that? Who was this jerk off from the News and Observer who had basically four players from UNC and Austin? What's his name again? Like Kalshin Tudor, whatever his name is. I showed you his tweet on
Colin
Saturday night.
Tudor.
I mean, his response basically was UVA's offense is supposed to go through Mike Scott, so that's why he put up the numbers. Well, the Bulls' offense was supposed to go through Michael Jordan back in the day, and that's why he put up those big numbers. I don't understand.
Yeah, and I know individual awards probably take a back seat for most teams to team success, but if I was Mike Scott, I'd feel a little bit gypped I didn't get player of the year.
I mean, I've said it time and time again, the league is run by the Carolina Mafia. You have the two Tobacco Road schools and everybody else. I mean, it's two different classes.
I go to the third Tobacco Road school. I would know that we're kind of the redheaded stepchild.
You know, yeah, you know a little something
about
that.
Pardon the pun, redheaded, but
boo.
You know, we don't really appreciate the Duke and Carolina bias down there.
I guess being 15 miles from each school kind of do that to you, reading the News and Observer every morning, not getting any state love.
Pretty much, no. We maybe have one writer that covers us, and he's probably a Carolina apologist.
So much somebody we know for UVA, but we're not going to name names here. We don't do that here on Living the Dream. Now, speaking of ACC, we got the tournament coming up in Atlanta on Thursday, and really, just the league is very – I don't see too many upsets on Thursday. I guess going to the first game, we have Maryland-Wake Forest. Maryland-Wake Forest, a 4-12 team as the 9 seed.
It's an incredibly weak bottom of the conference. It's a strong top with the top three, Florida State, in no particular order, Florida State, UNC, and Duke, and then Virginia at four, who Bubble Watch, by the way, has all of four of those teams as locks for the tournament. And then the middle is pretty solid, too. North Carolina State at five, Miami at six, even Clemson at seven, finished 8-8. And then when you get down to the 8-12, there are really some iffy ball clubs there.
Yeah, four-way tie for 4-12. And Wake Forest, I saw a stat where they've won three games in the last 2 months. That's it. As soon as they got to conference play, they fell off. Most of them, those losses being by double digits. And at insult to injury, they just kicked center Ty Walker off the team. A lot of turmoil in Winston-Salem.
Yeah, Jeff Bezdelic's had a turbulent couple years there, and you hope they'll get better. They have a big recruiting class signed for next year, but they're going to have to just see what they can do in the tournament.
The fallout was pretty crazy of that. I mean, Dino Gaudio takes them to two tournaments. He takes them all the way to number one of the country, has a tremendous recruiting class, and he gets fired. They fired for only three seasons in Winston-Salem. They bring in Jeff Bezdelic, who's obviously good friends with the athletic director, and at the bottom just completely falls off for Mr. Bezdelic.
Well, you know how they say, it's not how you do, it's who you know, right?
Absolutely. It's certainly gotten people to the top other places. And so you don't see a Wake Forest upset here?
Probably not. I think Stoglin and company will take care of Wake Forest. The only lower seed team I could see winning is Virginia Tech. They split with Clemson the regular season, and they almost beat Clemson at Little John last week, and that's the only real toss-up game I see.
That's right.
Despite it being the 10-7 as opposed to the 8-9.
I mean, both games were decided by 2 points, both the one in the Castle and the one at Little John just last week. I mean, Tech and Clemson are two very similar teams.
And it's important to note that Tech had Victor Davila for the win in Blacksburg and did not have him in Clemson last week.
Absolutely.
So if he does play, which he hasn't played the past six games, and if he does play, they definitely have a better chance.
And he was struggling with that groin injury, but Za'Darian Reigns is playing very well for them. Sophomore big man with sideline with a foot injury all season, but he's really done well the last six games.
Yeah, he'd be one of my finalists for most improved player in the conference if I had a choice. You know, nobody knew who he really was beginning of the year. Didn't play much of last year, but he's really emerged as probably their top offensive inside player, both offensive and defensive this season, especially with Davila on the bench.
Davila gone next year, they're really going to rely on him as well as C.J. Barksdale next year to control their front line. I guess going to the afternoon game, NC State against Boston College. BC gave him a run for money in Boston this year, but NC State took care of him in Raleigh.
Yeah, this game's not in Boston, so I don't see the Wolfpack having any trouble. Yeah. Not to be a homer or anything, but this team is just more talented than Boston College.
BC didn't win a
single
game.
More experienced. Yeah. Boston College didn't win a single game away from Chestnut Hill this year. I don't think NC State has any trouble with that.
What, nine freshmen this year, I two say transfers?
That, I say that, and the powers that be will find some way for Dennis Clifford to drop 50 points and Richard Howell to foul out of the game in the first half. And who do you know? Virginia's playing Boston College on Friday.
I certainly wouldn't mind Virginia getting a pass to Saturday. They haven't been to Saturday since, what, 1895? It's been ridiculous. Six other teams, in the last 6 years, every other team has been to Saturday except for Virginia, ever since expansion. I mean, they're serial choke artists in this tournament.
Yeah, you can't forget the last time they had a bye in the ACC tournament, and the Wolfpack knocked them off in the night game on Friday. Virginia was in control of that game, and then suddenly couldn't hit a bucket, and NC State comes back and wins.
NC State has a history of punking UVA in just about every sport now. Hopefully we can come to an end. I guess in the nightcap, we have, we can call them the home team, Georgia Tech, going against Miami. Miami's really fighting for their life, being on that NCAA bubble. We'll talk more about them later when we get to the bubble teams, but do you see an upset here for Georgia Tech?
I don't. I think that, aside from NC State, the other team that can help themselves the most here is Miami, and they're going to come in, and they know what they have to play for. They know they probably have to beat Georgia Tech and probably have to beat Duke to get a bid to the NCAA tournament. So they're going to take care of Georgia Tech and set themselves up for a showdown on Friday night.
Yeah, they played Georgia Tech in Phillips Arena back in January, won that game by 15 points. If they win that, they'll take on the 3-seed Florida State the next night, a team they already beat. So you think if they beat Florida State and they beat Georgia Tech, they can get in the tournament?
Yeah, sorry, I said Duke, but I meant Florida State. And I think two wins against Florida State could get them to the tournament. They're kind of in the same boat as NC State is. And now, remember that NC State won both meetings over the regular season, and that would go a long way, should go a long way, in determining if it was to pick between those two, who would go to the tournament based on that.
I guess that NC State and Miami would both really be fighting for their NCAA tournament lives. They'd both be intriguing storylines to look at. And assuming there are no upsets, which we don't think will happen, I mean, Friday could be a hell of a day of basketball, starting off with Maryland and Carolina. Maryland really gave Carolina a run for their money this season.
Yeah, they did. And that game at College Park, I thought Maryland probably outplayed North Carolina. And, you know, Carolina just more talented, I guess, and maybe some help from the officials, but like they do every game. But, and then they spanked Maryland at Carolina. So, you know, they say it's very tough to beat a team three times in a season. So we'll see. We'll obviously, assuming Maryland gets by Wake Forest, which we think they will.
They lost three straight. Maybe they win at Wake Forest, you know, build some momentum. And after, obviously, the afternoon game we have a lot of interest in, Virginia, NC State. They battled to a Virginia one-point victory in Raleigh this year. That was a hell of a game they had back in January 28th.
It was, and I was in the front row student section for that game, and wearing red, and I'll probably be wearing red on Friday if that happens. But it's really a toss-up, really probably one of the biggest toss-up games of the tournament that could happen. You know, Virginia probably will be without Malcolm Brogdon, who played a vital role in that win in Raleigh. But, you know, Virginia just has found ways to get things done this year with a limited roster. And with NC State's big men have the tendency to get in foul trouble. Like Richard Howell probably starts every game with two or three fouls. You know, UVA gets the ball to Mike Scott, and you never know what can happen.
That's right. The battle for the big men on the boards would be really intriguing. I mean, NC State got 16 offensive rebounds in the last meeting in Raleigh. Richard Howell and C.J. Leslie doing a terrific job on the boards. And both seven-man rotations would basically be a 7-on-7.
Yeah, people people say that UVA is a pretty shallow team, but NC State only goes 7 deep usually, sometimes 8 when Thomas Dete plays because of foul trouble. But so one of the things I don't know why Mark Gottfried doesn't do is play his freshman more. He didn't play his freshman very much in the non-conference portion of the season, and that really hurts the Wolfpack down the stretch, as they don't really go as deep in conference play when they need it the most. Tyler Harris, a highly touted recruit, doesn't get a whole lot of playing time. Got a little bit of playing time on Sunday against Virginia Tech, but other than that, he's been almost non-existent. And I really think that NC State's freshmen can help them out a lot in ways other than depth, especially in Atlanta this week.
Well, getting that bye was huge for Virginia again, with only 7-man rotation, because we literally only have 7 scholarship players. Getting that bye was huge for, and fatigue could be a problem for NC State and against playing Boston College.
I don't think that'll be the case. I think these players are in good enough shape, and they practice every day. They play 2 games a week. I think NC State will be fresh coming into that game, or whoever wins that game. I don't want to come out and say NC State is 100% sure to win that game, because that's bad. I'm an NC State fan and I'm a Redskins fan, so when I do that, bad things happen. But assuming NC State does get by, I don't think fatigue will be an issue.
What's crazy about this tournament is, as soon as the ACC tournament starts, you can throw out the records, because the 12 seed has beaten the 5 seed 4 out of 6 times since there's been a 12 seed.
Absolutely, and that's not good news for the Wolfpack, but hopefully this is one of those 2 times that doesn't happen.
BC has certainly had their moments this year, that win over Florida State. They also look good against Clemson. But like we said, they have not won a game outside Connie Forum this season. I guess in the nightcap, we got Duke, assuming Clemson can knock off Virginia Tech. We have Duke and Clemson. Duke narrowly escaped the Little John Coliseum this year with a 73-66 win. Clemson does have a tendency to play Duke well.
But I think Duke will be very angry after that game against Carolina on Saturday. They really didn't show up, to be honest. And I don't think Coach K will let his team look past Clemson, or even look past their semifinal opponent, if they make it that far. But I think Duke just has too much firepower, too much star power for Clemson to hang with them.
Yeah, maybe we can see some. I mean, Duke's had a whole week to sit on that, almost an entire week to sit on that embarrassing loss at home on senior night, and maybe add some new wrinkles to the offense, go to the Plumlees a little bit more, and stop settling for outside jumpers.
Yeah, I think they take a lot more outside jumpers, quick outside jumpers, than they probably should. 5 seconds in the shot clock, Austin Rivers pulls up and misses everything. But I think the Plumlees will be key in that game, not only scoring, but also rebounding. Clemson, not a very big team, and, probably more athletic than Duke is, but Duke has a size advantage and a depth advantage. So Duke is probably going to come away with the win there.
And they absolutely own the ACC tournament. And Carolina has a history of taking a nap in the tournament, not playing up to it, but Duke absolutely owns this tournament, whether it be in Greensboro, Atlanta, D.C., or even down in Tampa Bay.
Yeah, and Roy Williams has talked over the years about how he kind of doesn't value the conference tournament as much as maybe other coaches do and other teams do. And I think that's kind of not a very good mentality to have, because every game the committee is looking at, Carolina probably playing for a number one seed between them and Duke and maybe a Michigan State in the Big Ten tourney. And if you want to get the highest seed possible, come out and play every night and blow out your opponents, and only good things can happen.
Well, we look at last season. They beat Miami in the final seconds. They trailed that entire game until the last couple seconds. Clemson had a big lead on them as well, and then Duke just ran past them on that Sunday.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. And Duke had a much easier road to the final, beating Virginia Tech in the semifinal pretty handily, beating, I believe it was, sorry, I was at the tournament last year.
They beat Maryland that Friday, yeah.
It was Maryland, okay. Yeah, Maryland gave them a pretty good game, but Duke pulled away, and then Duke handled Tech after Carolina had 2 battles in the Friday-Saturday games.
What's the crazy thing is about Carolina this tournament, even their national title teams didn't even make it to Sunday. Their team at 05 lost to Georgia Tech in the semifinals, and Florida State knocked them off in 09. They're supposed to be unbeatable teams. They really don't really come to play in this tournament.
Maybe they want to rest up for the big dance, but you never know. I mean, this could be the year Carolina just blows everybody out. I certainly hope not, but
yeah,
this could be the year. This is a very dangerous team, and they will be a very dangerous team in the NCAA tournament.
Now, Saturday could also have some intriguing matchups. I mean, we could have UVA, UNC again, and we were talking beforehand how if there was any justice, how UVA would get another shot at UNC after that the hose job they had 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, and that's a lot of speculation. Just assuming there's 3 different teams that could be playing Carolina on Saturday,
and we haven't been to Saturday in my lifetime, basically. So.
This is true. And then you look at the bottom of the bracket. The likely matchup is Duke and Florida State. They split this year, each team winning in each other's house. Yeah, how do you view that? What do you think?
Well, it's really intriguing matchup. You have one team that's very guard heavy in Duke, and one team is very front court heavy in Florida State. But I think the experience against Virginia playing the four guard lineup really would really help the Seminoles in a tournament setting where the guards are more valued. I mean, the lineup of Davidus Dulkes, Luke Lowes, Ian Miller, of course, and Michael Snare. I mean, they really got it done for Florida State down the stretch, and I really think those guys are the key to beating Duke. Obviously, they're going to control the boards, but I think as Florida State's guards, three of which are seniors, I think are going to really get it done.
Yeah, and then, you know, all right, so what is your prediction for the tournament? So who do you think is going to make Sunday? Who do you think is going to win it? And who do you think gets that automatic bid from the ACC? Not that it really matters. But
unfortunately, I think we're looking at another Duke-Carolina finals, and Carolina will defeat either NC State or Virginia. They swept both teams in the regular season. Duke-Florida State, again, I think I really like the Florida State team this year, but Duke owns this tournament. I say Duke over Carolina on Sunday. How about you?
And I agree with you there. I think there's something about Duke and Mike Krzyzewski that brings out the best in them if they play, be it in Greensboro, Atlanta, Tampa, and Duke takes home this conference title.
They want that number one seed, too. I mean, the knack on them all season, they're a one-man show on offense, they're mentally weak, and Duke really knows how to turn it up in the month of March.
And I think that the battle for this fourth number one seed is you have three pretty much locks in Kansas, Syracuse, and Kentucky. I think this fourth number one seed is going to come out of the ACC, much like it did last year, and that was Duke last year. I think it'll be Duke this year who wins the ACC tournament and gets the fourth number one seed.
Either way, they'll probably end up playing in Greensboro. That's a huge advantage the Carolina schools have in the first round. I remember a couple years ago in UNC, they played their first round in Raleigh and their second round in the second couple round of games in Charlotte, so they didn't even get on the plane till the Final Four.
Yeah, and then I think I remember in 2005, it's a little off topic, but the same idea, is that Illinois, who was stacked that year with D. Brown, Darren Williams, all those guys, didn't even have to take a plane ever. You know, they got on the bus to Chicago, to Indianapolis, and then to St. Louis on their road to the Final Four, and obviously lost to Carolina in that national championship game. But it's such a huge advantage in the tournament playing closer to home against maybe a team from out west, or a team from Texas, or a team from Wisconsin, or something like that.
Pretty incredible how it works out always for the teams that are on top, how it's conveniently they always seem to work out with the locations. I guess now from the ACC to around the country, about disappointing teams, and ACC kind of, it really, the preseason writers got it right. I mean, Tech was down a little bit more, and NC State was up, but they really got it right this year, the predictions.
Yeah, I don't see any major differences from what I thought was going to be this season. I knew Boston College, Georgia Tech, Wake Forest would all be pretty bad, and I knew NC State and Miami were kind of those middle teams that could go either way, and they obviously did better than a few people expected, and then the top, you know, with Duke, Carolina, Florida State, Virginia was picked fourth, I believe, and from there it kind of just all shook itself out.
And the media's really patting themselves on the back, hey, we got this one right. But yeah, I guess
for once.
Yeah. Nationwide now, I guess we can look at teams on the rise and disappointing teams. And for disappointing teams, I mean, look no further than future ACC member Pittsburgh.
Oh, absolutely. They were ranked in the top 10 preseason, I believe, and they just did not get it going ever. I don't know. I don't follow the Big East. I don't know if it was bad coaching, injuries. I don't think it was anyway. But they, you know, even the Big East didn't seem as strong as it has been in past years, and Pittsburgh didn't really take advantage of that.
I think Pitt did have like an injury or two. I mean, but thinking with Ashton Gibbs, people are talking, this was a Final Four team preseason. They stumbled a little bit in the tournament, but they were talking about this was a Final Four team in the preseason, if you look at the magazines and everything. And they lost to Long Beach State early on. This was before we knew Long Beach was going to be good. Then they went and lost to Wagner and a Notre Dame team, which we didn't think was going to be very good as well. But, I mean, they had an 8-game slide midway through the season, and the wheels really fell off in Pittsburgh this season.
Yeah, you know, Notre Dame is on the other end of the spectrum, a pretty surprising team this year. You know, Jack Cooley stepped up pretty well. They were kind of disappointed last year when they lost to Florida State in the NCAA tournament, and people thought, you know, maybe they might not be back in the Big Dance, but, you know, they were ranked most of the year, and they're obviously a lock for the tournament. And the Big East tournament in New York is the only thing they really have left on their plate, which is pretty much for seeding only.
I think Mike Bray did one of the best coaching jobs in the country this year. They lose Ben Hansborough last year. They think, oh, this is going to be a down year. They lost to Maryland early in the season, and you're thinking they have to climb the Big East ladder, but, I mean, they had a huge winning streak. The only team to knock off Mike Bisaglia's team, Syracuse, they knocked them off, had a big win. They were like St. John's last year. They won every big game they were in.
That's right, and another disappointing team is maybe St. John's. I know they lost a lot of production, but and then obviously they have the whole turmoil with Steve Lavin battling illness, but they really didn't come to play this year either when we stay in the Big East.
Yeah, they had a tough season up there in New York. They had a lot of losses early on. Again, brand new personnel from last year. I think it was 9 freshmen. Also, Villanova. I mean, what's it called? Villanova had Jay Wright's team had a terrible season this year.
Yeah, I mean, what the heck is going on with the traditional powers in the Big East?
Because that's allowed for teams like South Florida, Cincinnati, all them to rise in the standings. We get more on South Florida when we get to the bubble teams.
You know, another disappointing team who is also a bubble team I see is Texas out of the Big 12. You know, they have one of the best players in the Big 12 in Jacobin Brown, and they're sitting squarely on the bubble. They have a loss to North Carolina State in the Legends Classic this year, a bad loss to Oregon State in that same tournament, and they're 9-9 in conference, and you know, I think a lot of people expected Texas to pick it up this year. Rick Barnes is a tremendous coach, and you know, Texas is not as good as people thought they would be.
Well, they lost three good freshmen in the NBA. That guy Tristan Thomas, I think Tristan Thompson lost him to the NBA. Then possibly rebuilding here, but I think the more disappointing team is Texas A&M. I mean, they were picked to win the Big 12 preseason.
Really, with Billy, even in Billy Kennedy's first year,
they're supposed to have a loaded roster. Like I don't follow the Big 12 as much. I know they had injuries, but they were picked to win the Big 12 this season, and the wheels completely fell off in College Station.
Yeah, and one team that did take advantage of that, who maybe not totally surprises, but surprises with, I guess we knew they would still be pretty good, but we didn't think they'd be as good as they traditionally are, is Kansas, and Kansas is number one seed in the Big 12, and you know that people were saying, you know, this might be Kansas's down year. Maybe they might have a similar year to what Carolina had a couple years ago, but no. I mean, Kansas just took care of business this season.
I mean, the Morris twins are gone. They lose a couple moving pieces from that team from the Elite Eight last year. But I got his name wrong. I'm all in state. Thomas Robinson. I got to start watching more Big 12 basketball. Thomas Robinson really picked it up this year. He was a bench warmer last year. Do you see that story that ESPN ran on him about all the tragic losses?
I did, and he's really overcome adversity to become one of the best players in the country.
He's really thrived off the adversity he's faced, and he's become a really great leader for that team.
And Kansas is definitely a favorite to get to the Final Four, if not win the whole thing.
Speaking, I guess going on to the Big 12, I mean, who invited Frank Haith to the party? Missouri this year. Well, I mean, what are you making of the Tigers?
Definitely a favorite for National Coach of the Year. And a lot of that, he had pretty much a full cupboard from leftover from Mike Anderson, but, you know, he's done a great job at Missouri, and they're also a very highly regarded team. And they, you know, it's them. They and Kansas split this year. Missouri had that big lead in Allen Fieldhouse and frittered it away. But Missouri is also a team that can maybe sneak into that one line if they can win the Big 12 tournament over Kansas.
I mean, they only use like a 7-man rotation too, but Frank Haith, the 4-guard system, and boy, did this guy ever land on his feet. They were talking about firing him in Miami. He finished above 500 in the ACC one time in like his 7 years in Miami, and he bolts from Missouri, and now he's National Coach of the Year.
It'll be interesting to see how well he can do building up that program, keeping it where it is. You know, if he can do what other coaches have done with less talent. He'll obviously have less talent when his players graduate, and his recruiting classes are going to be very important so he can keep Missouri at the level that they're at.
Also, the program's been undergoing a lot of changes this year, going to the SEC, having to deal with Kentucky and Florida. They're actually going to be in the SEC East, if you can believe that.
Yeah, well, we know that geography doesn't mean jack shit anymore with conference realignment. You had TCU going to the Big East, but not anymore. You have San Diego State going to the Big East for football, Boise State going to the Big East for football, so forget all of that. But I think that can work to Missouri's advantage a little bit, as the SEC is traditionally not as strong as it is in basketball as the Big 12 is. You have Kentucky, you have Florida, you have Vanderbilt, who are consistently very good, and then you have really a lot of teams after that that are pretty mediocre. You can throw Tennessee in there as well, and I think Missouri can really take advantage of the fact that they're moving conferences, along with Texas A&M.
Maybe Anthony Grant. Also, Alabama's got a decent thing going there. But I think you're getting away from the established powers like Texas, because Baylor's good now, obviously getting away from Kansas, ending that border war. I think they'll do wonders for Frank Haith in Missouri.
And you mentioned former VCU assistant Anthony Grant, former VCU coach Anthony Grant in Alabama, former Florida assistant down at with Billy Donovan. And a lot of people thought Alabama would break out this year. You know, a lot of talent, Tony Mitchell, Jamichael Green, but they find themselves on the bubble. You know, they're a fringe bubble team as it is now. I think Bubble Watch just took them off.
Yeah, they had a lot of what's called. They had three suspensions going early in the season. They were ranked in the preseason top 20, but as the season went on, the wheels kind of fell off.
Yeah, I watched them earlier in the season in the Puerto Rico tip off, and they beat the tar out of Maryland. And you know they were ranked 15 in that. I saw that. I'm like, there's no way this team can miss the tournament. But now it's looking like that's what's going to happen.
I think that four-game losing streak midway through January, where they committed the unforgivable sin. They lost to South Carolina, the worst team in the SEC. That kind of like capped off their four-game losing streak. They did lose to South Carolina.
They also lost at LSU when basically their whole starting lineup was suspended for that game.
The whole SEC West is crazy this year. I mean, look at Mississippi State with Ricky Stansberry. Look at they were going to challenge Kentucky in the SEC this year, and they completely fell off as well.
And Mississippi State, kind of segueing into bubble teams, is they were ranked part of the season. Now Bubble Watch has them on their work left to do category, and their RPI is 60, strength of schedule 77, which isn't a great computer profile, 8-8 in the SEC. And, you know, they are one of those teams that can definitely find themselves outside looking in on Selection Sunday.
Well, the non-conference, they beat fellow bubble teams. They beat Arizona. They beat West Virginia. You at the time, you think, oh, this is, like I said, this is going to be a great team. But then, again, the five-game losing streak going on in February, and they lost to some terrible teams. They lost to Georgia, LSU, Auburn. It's not like they were losing to good teams. Those were some bad losses on their resume.
And they do get a rematch with Georgia on Thursday in the SEC tournament. But also, you have to bring up that loss against Kentucky a couple weeks ago where they were ahead most of the game, and Kentucky mounted a late surge and came back on Mississippi State's home floor. And you got to figure if they pull that win out, you know, they're probably looking good for the tournament committee, but not so much anymore.
Yeah, somehow, even with that five-game losing streak, which shows how weak the bubble is, I mean, Lenardi still had them as safely in despite this five-game losing streak. And I believe in the SEC, they're 21-10. They only have an 8-8 record in a very weak SEC.
Yeah, they all, you know, yeah. You mentioned they have some pretty good power non-conference wins over power conference teams, Texas A&M, Arizona, and also West Virginia, who is another bubble team out of the Big East. What are your thoughts on West Virginia? Do you think they're in? Do you think they're out?
I think just the strength of the Big East, the Big East number one RPI. West Virginia, they did beat Georgetown. They had a couple quality wins in the non-conference as well. West Virginia, despite the struggles late in the season, I believe West Virginia gets in as possibly a 10, maybe 11 seed.
West Virginia, not a gaudy record at 19-12, 9-9 in the Big East, but a RPI of 40, which is similar to where Virginia's is, and people have them as lock, and their strength of schedule is 11. So that the committee will look very favorably upon those numbers.
Yeah, playing in the Big East certainly helps, especially when you're on the bubble. Speaking of the Big East as well, the Big East tournament going on right now. UConn, with Jim Calhoun back, they're playing inspired ball with their head coach back now.
Yeah, and remember, they were the 9 seed last year in New York, and they won the whole darn thing. And they're the 9 seed this year, so granted, Kemba Walker now plays for the Charlotte Bobcats, but Connecticut is squarely on the bubble, a higher RPI and strength of schedule than West Virginia, but a losing record in the Big East.
I believe they have 8 wins against the RPI top 100, which is still keeping them in, but going back to Kemba last year, I mean, that had to be one of the greatest 5-day run in sports history. I mean,
oh, absolutely.
Fatigue be damned. I mean, if they get past DePaul today, which they look to be in good shape right now, who's the 8th seed in that tournament? Is 8th seed Seton Hall, a team they've also gotten by this year. I mean, it could send up a potential rematch for Syracuse, and God knows they've had some classics with Syracuse in that Big East tournament.
Yeah, that's correct. And, you know, playing teams like Syracuse, maybe getting another shot at a team like Syracuse or Notre Dame could really help one of these bubble Big East teams, and especially if they can beat them.
Again, playing really inspired ball. That Jim Calhoun is back, and you never know. That's what makes March Madness so great. You know, that's the unpredictability of it all. Just going back to staying with the Big East, how about South Florida? What do you think of the Stan Heath and the Bulls' chances this season?
Well, they have also surprised some people. South Florida, you don't really think of as a traditional basketball power. You don't really think of them as a tournament team. I can't remember the last time they were in the tournament, which probably means it was a long time ago, because I've been watching basketball for 19 years. But they have some pretty good computer numbers, RPI of 44, strength of schedule at 29. Where are they in the Big East?
The sixth seed.
They're the sixth seed. So they have some – their non-conference profile isn't great. I mean, they lost – they blew an opportunity against Kansas this year. They lost to VCU. They lost to Old Dominion, lost to Penn State. But they really picked themselves up in conference play. And – right now, if you put a gun to my head and said South Florida, I'd say in, because 12-6 in the Big East, I mean, one of the strongest conferences, number one in the RPI. know, they have wins over. You know, they just did. They have wins over Seton Hall, who's a fellow bubble team. Have a okay win over Rutgers, but they really hurt themselves against West Virginia on Saturday.
They had a chance, but I really have a tough time seeing a team with 12 Big East wins come in. They really helped themselves out late with the win over Louisville, win over Cincinnati, teams that are safely in. I think South Florida gets in as possibly a 12 seed.
Yeah, and in conference, they also have some very close losses to Connecticut. They lost by 3 back in December, lost by 9, sorry, by 8 at Syracuse. You know, they did get a big win over Louisville near down the stretch. If South Florida doesn't get in, it's because of their non-conference resume. I mean, just going down, losses to Auburn, lost to Southern Miss, who's another, it was a pretty strong Conference USA team, but still, that's a team you'd expect a Big East team to beat.
Yeah, South Florida really picked it up once conference play started this year. I guess, speaking of weakness, how about the Pac-12 this year? I mean, no teams that are currently in lock right now. I don't think I've ever seen that from a BCS conference.
Yeah, and it's really hard to think of a BCS conference as a one-bid league, and I don't think ultimately that it will be. But I think the team with the best chance of getting in, teams with the best chances of getting in right now are Washington and California. And Washington, number one seed for the tournament in Los Angeles. California, not a good strength of schedule, but a top 40 RPI. And also, two teams you also have to look at are Arizona, who has been somewhat disappointing this year, and Oregon, who Virginia beat back in December and really kind of eaten up some cupcakes in the Pac-12 this year and boosted their record, but they still are have a chance in the Pac-12 tournament. Like Pac-10, Pac-12. I'm not used to it.
Conferences don't make sense anymore.
No more, yeah. But Oregon and Arizona, really, if they – I don't think that all four teams will get in, but I think as many as three can get in from the Pac-12 or as few as one if California or Washington loses in their first game in the Pac-12 tournament.
California, as long as they don't take a major dump in the first round of the Pac-12 tournament, they should be safely in. Washington with some real head-scratching losses this year. Lorenzo Romar's team has a history of turning up the side. I see them winning the Pac-12 tournament. They have a chance. But you raise an interesting point with Oregon. I mean, they won 6 of their last 7 games. Dana Altman's done a tremendous job in Eugene. But looking down their schedule, I really don't see too many marquee wins they have. They had a couple chances against Cal. It blew it against Washington. Arizona's a decent win. But I really don't – you can't really make a case for a loss.
And out of conference, real big opponents they played out of conference were Vanderbilt, Virginia, and BYU, and they lost all three of those games. Their only power conference, non-conference win was against Nebraska, who stunk it up in the Big Ten this year.
Yeah, they're going to need to do some work in the Pac-12 tournament for sure. If they get a win over Cal and make it to Sunday, they possibly can make a chance with a weak bubble this year. But again, I don't really see Oregon as making much of an at-large case.
No, definitely not. I think that if they beat one of those fellow bubble teams in the Pac-12 tournament, there I go again. They might have a chance, but I think the Pac-12 is probably one of the weakest power conferences this season, if not the weakest.
The Mountain West is a much better conference than the Pac-12 this year. Those are the best teams out west are in the Mountain West.
Yeah, and the Mountain West is going to get probably three teams in. You think with UNLV, San Diego State, and
New Mexico. They all seem like locks. And hell, if BYU was still in that conference this year, how competitive they'd be.
Oh, wow, yeah. I mean, I think that BYU kind of helped themselves by going to the West Coast.
But, I mean, it's so much talent in that conference this year. I mean,
another Mountain West team who's on the bubble is Colorado State, and they have very good computer numbers. Number 5 strength of schedule in the country. You know, they've beaten all three of the locks we have from the Mountain West, San Diego State, New Mexico, and UNLV.
Yeah, the conference being very top heavy has allowed them teams like that, and even TCU. I mean, they're not in the at-large conversation right now, but it's allowed them to get good wins. But yeah, Colorado State, I think as of right now, they're on the outside looking in, possibly a trip to Dayton at best. But they'll need to do some work in the Mountain West tournament. What do you think as far as the Rams' chances?
I think if they win a couple games, they play TCU in the first round. So if they can get by that, and they can get probably their conference semifinals, they have a very good chance with their computer profile. Yeah, I saw them play against Duke this season, and they got blown out by Duke, obviously. But I didn't really think much of Colorado State then, but they've really picked it up in conference.
That's what's really going to help their cause. They play well towards the end of the year. I mean, ESPN, Joe Lenardi's really liked the production they've had late in the conference season as well. I guess going back, it's the only conference we haven't covered now, Big Ten. Yeah,
the Big Ten, the only bubble team really to speak of, everyone else above them is a lock, is Northwestern.
And Northwestern, ESPN is hell-bent on getting Northwestern in that
tournament.
As
we know, has never played in the NCAA tournament.
I think it will help with the cause here.
Do you think they'll get their first bid?
I really don't see how. Their only win of the season against Michigan, they have a losing record in the Big Ten. I mean, they certainly had their chances. I mean, they had Ohio State on the ropes. They had a great game against Michigan State as well. But they had their chances. But I really can't see a team with a losing record in conference getting in.
Yeah, the one thing that can help the Wildcats is that number 8 strength of schedule. But granted, if you don't do things with the teams you've played against, then you know you really don't help yourself. You can have the greatest strength of schedule on earth, and if you don't win those games, you know, I witnessed it firsthand with North Carolina State. You know, if you don't win those games, you don't help yourself at all, even if you do have a strong schedule.
Like we said, certainly plenty of chances for the Wildcats this season. They draw Minnesota, tough game in the Big Ten tournament. We can both agree if they lose to the Gophers, they're out. No chance, right?
Absolutely. The Big Ten currently has 6 locks. Michigan State, Ohio State, Michigan,
Purdue,
Indiana, and
who else? In the
come
Big
on,
Ten?
I know this.
Who else in the Big Ten? Michigan, Ohio State.
Stand by.
Big Ten. So prepared right now.
Did we say Purdue?
Indiana, Wisconsin. We said Wisconsin.
Did not say Wisconsin. They're also going to make.
How
it.
Can we forget about Bo Ryan and the Badgers? All Wisconsin. I think they could be a dangerous team in the tournament this year with that swing offense they run.
Absolutely. And when they run the type of game that Wisconsin plays, it's very similar to Virginia's offense. It really gives them a chance every game. We saw them play against North Carolina this year. They really slowed the Tar Heels down, made them play to their pace, and very nearly pulled out a win in Chapel Hill.
Yeah, they're great at grounding those teams that love to play the full court. If they can force a team like North Carolina or even a team like VCU to run like a full court, to run like a half court game, they really get to throwing their team off the number.
Yeah, Big Ten probably we can say is the best conference in the. Just looking at it on paper in the country with 5 ranked teams in the top 15, I mean, Ohio State number 7, Michigan State number 8, Michigan number 13, Wisconsin number 12, Indiana number 15. You know, all those teams are probably going to get very high seeds.
It's certainly top heavy this year. And even Iowa had some amazing wins in the Big Ten this year. If they didn't do so terrible in the out of conference, their resume would be great right now. If they didn't lose a couple of those games, they lost to Campbell, they lost to. Well, they lost to UNI.
Lost to Clemson, too.
Lost to Clemson. I mean, just think if they just didn't take a nap in the out-of-conference games, they'd have a great resume right now.
Yep.
It's a disappointing team for the Big Ten because we left off Illinois. Bruce Weber's team really struggled down the stretch this
Bruce
year.
Bruce Weber could be out of a job by the end of the season.
Which is nuts. I mean, he's just a couple years away from taking his team to the national championship.
Yeah, they did make the tournament last year, but in the Big Ten, making the tournament isn't good enough.
Especially with Indiana. You have Thad Matta, John Beilein, and Tom Izzo. No, they're not going anywhere anytime soon. They're going to be there. You have Tom Crean.
Neither is
really
Tom Crean. Neither is Bo Ryan.
Matt Painter's not going anywhere anytime soon.
I don't think Tubby Smith is going anywhere anytime soon, even though Minnesota is probably not as strong as most other teams in that conference and hasn't been for a while.
That's right. It's the higher-ups in Illinois see that he's falling behind. He's not really recruiting the Chicago area as well. But it'd be a shame to see him go. I've always seen him as one of the good guys in college basketball.
He definitely is. You know, very, very classy guy. Very few coaches, you know, are as well-respected as he is.
I've actually seen some reports from making Shaka Smart because he's from the Midwest. Could you see him going to Illinois?
You know, I don't see how he could leave Richmond after last year, and he was courted by North Carolina State. He was courted by a bunch of other power conference schools, and he didn't go, and he was signed to a long-term contract. So I don't know why he would leave.
He's making over $1 million now, isn't he?
Yeah, and that sounds pretty good to me. I wish I had that kind of money.
And the CAA, I mean, you could own that league for years. But going back to Mark Few at Gonzaga, like owning what they do, I mean, they could be that top team and be in the NCAA tournament almost every year.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the CAA is pretty variable from year to year. But if Shaka keeps up building that program, I mean, great. You know, if he does, we saw what he did this year. We talked about it earlier with that loss of talent, but he still made his team get back to the tournament.
That havoc game plan he runs, the full court press, and all those points off turnovers. Could you see that working in a major conference?
Well, we see some instances of it. We see Missouri, but I don't think overall a real extreme offense like that could work. In the long run,
just the athletes you see, it's night and day between the mid-major schools and a school like the Big Ten. It wouldn't be really a fit because in the Big Ten, going back to Wisconsin, those teams that run the half-court offense and like to keep it within 50, 60 points a game, it'd really be he'd kind of be kind of an outsider there, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and I watch enough basketball to know that when a very fast team plays against a very slow team, you know, I was at a North Carolina State Princeton game this year. Princeton just squeezed the hell out of the ball. slowed him down, and 9 out of 10 times, the slow team controls the tempo and generally wins the game.
Got to learn to embrace the pace. Imagine if UVA and Wisconsin playing in basketball. What would the final score of that game be?
20-17.
Yeah, first team to 20 wins?
Probably.
Be crazy. I mean, some great defense played overall, but it would set the game back offensively in basketball many years.
Well, Virginia scored 70 on Michigan. I mean, you never know.
Exactly. Great, great shooting night. You never know. I guess sticking with the NCAA tournament, last four in maybe, who do you see as teams that are teetering but are in at this point?
I'm going to be a homer here and say NC State is in.
There's a shocker.
I know. Everyone in the room shakes their head. But, you know, I think that they got to 20 wins. They're probably going to get to 21 wins against Boston College. I know Joe Lunardi has them out. I know everyone else has them out. But they have a strong strength of schedule. They're sitting just outside the top 50 at last time I checked. And if they beat Virginia, then that game's definitely a toss-up. I think they're in the tournament.
Here's where we're going to disagree. State had that three-game stretch of Duke, Carolina, Florida State, two of which were at home in Raleigh. And they blew their chances in all those. I mean, yes, the officiating was very questionable.
Well, they weren't even competitive in that Carolina, and even in that FSU game. That Duke game, if NC State is left out, that Duke game in Cameron Indoor Stadium is going to be the reason that they're left out.
A 20-point lead. I mean, you got to hold on to a 20-point lead when you have it. I mean, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Your 20-point lead on the road, you got to hold on to that. Again, question the officiating, but still, a lot of their wins were against Wake Forest, Boston College, Virginia Tech, those bottom tier teams we're talking about.
They really benefited from the unbalanced schedule, and their two biggest wins this year, be it out of conference or in conference, are both against Miami, and you can probably throw that Texas game in there too. Really, three real solid wins, and zero outstanding wins. They had their chances. I mean, they played Vanderbilt very close, they played Indiana very close, and they faltered against Syracuse out of conference.
They're definitely going to need to do some work in Atlanta to improve their chances. Now, I'm going to make my case for Miami. They've really had a tough season this year. Daquan Jones suspended for the time for the Shapiro violation. You had Reggie Johnson miss some time for injury. He missed the first couple months. Yeah, they had a couple out-of-conference losses they shouldn't have, but they won at Cameron. They defeated Florida State. They're 19-11, 9-7. I really think Miami belongs in.
Yeah, well, NC State beat them twice. And I know we've seen instances where teams beat other teams multiple times and don't get in. We saw Colorado last year beat Kansas State three times and still didn't get in the field. But, I mean, it's really going to come down to this ACC tournament. Neither team can really help themselves in the first round against weak competition. And that Friday is really going to be judgment day for both NC State and Miami.
Yeah, I mean, just by playing those teams, just by NC State playing Boston College and Miami playing Georgia, that's going to bring down their RPI. Even if they beat them, it's going to bring down their RPI.
Yeah, that's right. And just glossing over Miami's schedule, lost at Purdue, have an overtime loss to Mississippi, a loss to West Virginia, a loss to Memphis. So they're kind of similar to NC State in the fact that they really didn't do a whole lot with their big teams on their non-conference schedule. But as you said, in conference, they really made up for it with wins at Durham and beating Duke and beating Florida State at home.
It's a dangerous team with Kenny Kaji coming on this year, plus that backcourt of Malcolm Grant, Durant Scott. It's got to be one of the best in the ACC.
Yeah, it definitely is. I think I would wager to say it is the best in the ACC.
I guess the folks down in Chapel Hill in the Triangle area would disagree with you.
Like they do all the time.
Oh, yeah. No, they say, like I said, Stillman White going on second team always. I'm kind of surprised. James Michael McAdoo. James Michael McAdoo. That's what drove me absolutely nuts when I was at the game in Chapel Hill. I mean, James Michael McAdoo. All right, I'll stop talking about James Michael McAdoo. Anyway, I guess looking else at the bubble, what do we think about Xavier? Xavier, the Musketeers really up and down season, the brawl against Cincinnati, they really took a turn for the worse.
Really, we kind of missed them in our disappointing teams. I don't really know how we didn't pull them up, but they're currently the last team in, according to Joe Lunardi. I don't see how. I mean, the only case you can really make for them is out of conference schedule, and even then, it's not that great.
Now, going back to where we were talking about the mid majors with the name recognition with Gonzaga and Xavier's definitely in that class. I mean, you kind of expect them to be part of the established order. They had a lot of really dumb losses this year, losing to UMass. They lost to fellow bubble teams, St. Louis, Dayton. You really can't make a case for them. They really don't have many. I mean, yes, they beat Vanderbilt. Purdue also is kind of a strong team. They really don't have any marquee wins this year. I think they definitely need to do some work in the A-10 tournament.
Yeah, you know, people like Roy Williams say the conference tournament really isn't as important as people make it out to be, but for teams like this, it really is.
I mean, it's do or die. Basically, like this is the tournament right now. If you win, you keep playing. I mean, looks like they'll play LaSalle, and I think they'll need to beat St. Louis in the conference semifinals.
Yeah, St. Louis is another team that is kind of, I think they're in right now as we speak. But if they lose to Xavier, are they, you know, can you look at them the same way? Are they in? Can you take them over Xavier?
I think they're counting on St. Louis getting to the conference finals of that tournament. They've done pretty well in the A-10 this year. Not a whole lot out of conference. They beat, of course, you're thinking at the beginning of the season, hey, they beat Villanova, they beat Washington. Those are great wins, right? But they both kind of stumbled.
Yeah, Washington is a decent win, but Villanova definitely not. And for what it's worth, going back to that Xavier-LaSalle game, LaSalle did win the first meeting, the only meeting between the two teams by 10 points. That game was in Philadelphia.
That'd be certainly a huge game for the Musketeers for their chances. Let's see, who else in the bubble? We've talked Texas, we've talked Northwestern. Who else do you see like on the outside looking in that could really help themselves in the tournament this week?
Well, I'm going down. I know I'm relying heavily on Lenardi here, but how about Tennessee?
Tennessee,
the number two seed in the SEC tournament, right?
Oh, yeah. They really turned it on once SEC play started. They new coach, so dealing with the fallout of the whole Bruce Pearl shenanigans, his unceremonious departure from Knoxville. But they really did turn it on this year late in the SEC season. They won both meetings with Florida, didn't they?
Right. And they're out. They played in the Maui this year, right? And
correct. They lost to Memphis. They lost to Duke.
Got some pretty good. That helps their strength of schedule.
That win over Chaminade's great for the strength of schedule.
Oh yeah, definitely.
But yeah, they had a couple. They lost to CFC. They lost to Austin Peay. They lost to Oakland. They had a 4-game losing streak where everybody thought they were dead in the out of conference. But they, like I said, they really turned it on. They've won. Actually, they've won 8 of 9 games, which again, teams they really look at going down the stretch.
Yeah, it's the one thing the committee really puts a huge value on is. Last 10 games, last 5 games, you know, how well have you done? And that could really help the Volunteers on Selection Sunday.
I guess in our last couple minutes now, gun to your head, who wins the national championship? Who do you see cutting down the next
Kentucky? Most talent in the country. Maybe not the most honest coach, but I know we have a Syracuse alum in the room, so maybe I'm getting his goat a little, but gun to my head, Kentucky. Right now,
I agree with that. That front court seems. I know the NCAA tournament is very backcourt driven, but the Kentucky front court, I just can't see anybody beating.
No, Anthony Davis, just those pipe cleaner arms that just knock everything out of sight. You know, really only one senior on that team, so
I really don't like agreeing with you very much. But it looks like we're both in agreement on the Kentucky Wildcats bringing it home this year. It looks like we're out of time. Thank you very much for joining us today. We'll see you later.